You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 16th of November 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I'll just start today by reminding listeners that we currently have a series on Real Britannia, on the greatest Britons, and we've been covering Major General Charles Gordon for the last six episodes. It's the final episode tonight. And I really recommend people listen to that because he's such an incredible character and it really challenges the narrative of the British Empire somehow oppressing the native peoples. General Gordon was such a good man that he actually donated about 90% of his wages away to charity. And he particularly worked to improve the lives of poor white boys. And this was back in 1860, he was doing this, and he was helping to set up schools for them. He was teaching in the schools himself. He was helping to put these children up so that they had somewhere to live. He was finding homes for them. And this was going on 150 years ago. The white working class, of course, they were the only working class back then in Britain. Britain was 99.9% white. And they were being overlooked. All that time ago, they were being overlooked. And they're still being overlooked today. This is the most shocking thing. We knew that they needed help back then, and we know that they need help today, and yet they are the least looked after portion of society. And the first news story that I've got today, the title is London University that boasts of being one of the most diverse in the UK failed to admit a single white working class student in 2017. What does that tell us? It tells us that diversity means getting rid of all the white people. White people are not included in diversity. Here we have it, the most diverse university in the UK. And it doesn't have a single white working class student. And I'm guessing that because this is a new article, it's only just been released, and yet it's talking about the year of 2017, that must be the most up-to-date year that we actually have records for. Now, the reason why this is so concerning is because the white working class are the group in society that are the most likely to succeed if they actually have the resources given to them. Why do I say that? Well, I say that because the average IQ of white people is 100. So the average IQ of the white working class is going to be around 100. If you have an IQ of 100 and you are given the resources, you can bump that up to 110. If you have an IQ of 110, that predicts a good lifestyle. That predicts that you would be able to take charge of things. You might be able to do engineering. You might be able to be a scientist. You're going to be a productive member of society. If you contrast that with some of these other races, if we look at Arabs, for instance, their average IQ is 85. They are going to be The predictions for somebody with an IQ of 85 is sort of being a security guard or working in retail, something like that. If we look at Black Africans have an IQ between 70, 75. If they have a bit of European blood in there, if they are of mixed race because they're second or third generation and their parents intermarried with whites, then their IQ could go up to 85. And all these diversity drives, all these diversity agendas in the universities, that's who they're aimed at. They are aimed at the people who are least likely to be able to succeed. It just seems crazy to me. Okay, they say, well, they're least likely to succeed, so we need to give them more resources. But you can't fill more than a pint of liquid into a pint glass. If you have people with a certain average IQ, there is only so far that they are going to be able to go. And if we were aiming these resources at the white working class, you know, some of these people could be nurses, they could be doctors, they could be scientists, and they're going to be very good at their job. It's not good for the economy more than anything else. Obviously, I am more concerned about these overlooked members of our extended family, because that's what your race is. But it's also no good for the economy. A university that boasts of being one of the most diverse in the UK failed one year to admit a single white working class student. This startling fact appears in a document detailing plans to improve access to SOAS, University of London. The document says the number of white undergraduates living in poor neighbourhoods that were recruited through the main UCAS admission round in 2017 was zero. Zilch. Absolutely nothing. The disclosure will fuel growing concerns that white working class children, particularly boys, have become the education system's forgotten dispossessed. Now, it's all very well, the newspapers talking about this, but when anybody tries to do anything about this, for instance, there was a rich philanthropist recently who tried to find a university that would accept thousands of pounds in donations from him in order for those donations to be directed towards the white working class. He wanted to provide scholarships for the white working class. And the reason why he wanted to do this is because he heard of the Stormzy scholarship, which is a scholarship that is aimed only at black pupils. I think he donated £1 million to either Oxford or Cambridge, and that was to go on scholarships for black pupils. So this white philanthropist thought, well, I'd like to do the same. I would like to make an endowment that is going to help the most forgotten group in society. And every one of the universities that he went to with this suggestion refused to accept it. They said, we cannot accept this because we will be accused of being racist if we do. Just think of the double standards here. They will welcome a donation from Stormzy for black pupils. And in actual fact, I think it was Cambridge. Oxford then stepped forward and said, well, we're going to do the same without even getting an endowment from anybody. We're going to do the same, and we're going to provide scholarships for black pupils. So they're quite happy to do that. But this merest suggestion of doing the same for white pupils, they can't do it because they know that they're going to be accused of being racist for doing so. What does this tell us? It tells us that just trying to do your best for white people now, you are going to be accused of being racist. Just targeting anything at helping whites means you're going to be accused of being racist. Just think about this double standard in our society, a society that white people built and that white people are now rapidly deconstructing. White pupils eligible for free school meals are half as likely as their peers from poor ethnic minority families to achieve strong passes at GCSE. They're also more likely to attend a failing school. And again, because we know what their average IQ is, this means that these white pupils are being neglected because they should be at the top of their class. They should be doing really well because of the IQ that they have. This means that they are being ignored. It means that the ethnic minorities are being favoured in the classroom. Think how that must feel to these poor whites. And they must know that they have the intelligence. They must know that they are more intelligent than their non-white peers. And yet they are not given the resources. They're not given the attention that they should be given. And then when they leave the school and they apply for jobs, they discover that the place that they are applying for a job at has a diversity quota. And if they're not non-white or homosexual or transgender, then they're going to be passed over for the job anyway, regardless of what their qualifications are. I would hate to be a young white man living in 2020 Britain. There really don't seem to be many options for youngsters today. All ethnic minority groups in England are now, on average, more likely to go to university than their white British peers. So we're not even just including the working class here. We're just saying that non-whites are now more likely to go to university than whites. Do we see any evidence of this? Do we see anybody speaking about this? No, we don't. We just see all these diversity drives. We hear that we must get more black pupils into university. We must get more non-whites into university. And yet there are more of them that go to the university than whites. I mean, this is shocking statistics, isn't it? It's the complete opposite of everything that you are led to believe by the BBC and by the mainstream media. SOAS, where more than half of the intake is from ethnic minority backgrounds, describes itself as having an exceptionally diverse student body and says its mission is to recruit and teach diverse students. Again, this proves that diversity does not include whites, doesn't it? If they haven't taken in one white working class, and yet they say they have an exceptionally diverse student body. Its access and participation plan for 2020 to 2025, which all universities must submit to the regulator to demonstrate how they will recruit and support underrepresented groups, shows a worrying absence of white working class youngsters. So they're still describing ethnic minorities and as an underrepresented group, even though there are more of them now in university than there are whites. Even though they only make up 15% of the country, they make up over 50% of the intake at the universities, and they're still being described as underrepresented groups, and all universities have to submit to the regulator what their plans are for getting more of these supposedly underrepresented groups into university. The recently published document admits SOAS had zero acceptances, rounded to the nearest five, from white students from low participation neighbourhoods via the UCAS main scheme in 2017. This excluded clearing and direct applications. Coming from a low participation neighbourhood, one in which few youngsters go to university, is one of the main measures of disadvantage used by higher education. So they look at the places in the country that have the least numbers of pupils that come in for further education, and they class them as being a low participation neighbourhood, and that usually ties in with it being a poor neighbourhood, a white neighbourhood. And what do the government do with these neighbourhoods that are like that? Well, they want to insert more diversity into them. They want to break up the neighbourhood all the more. And it's terrible that these pupils can't actually get into the university and they've been neglected. But the one thing that they do usually have is a close-knit community. They do have a close-knit neighbourhood where they rely on one another. And these youngsters, instead of going to university, they will get a job working for a friend of theirs or working for a friend of the family. And by importing diversity into those neighbourhoods, you break up that system as well. So not only are they not going to university, the government's actual plan of importing diversity everywhere is going to break up the one route that these youngsters do have to getting a job and working and being productive members of society. Other universities in London have admitted very low proportions under the measure. Imperial College recruited 30 white applicants from poor neighbourhoods in 2017, just 1% of its intake, just 1%. And these white students, don't forget, they're told they have white privilege. Somehow they are privileged in the fact that they don't get accepted at university and they don't get the teaching, the same amount of teaching and tuition that these non-whites get. So all the while this is happening, these white pupils are being told that they're privileged, that they somehow have more than everybody else. Conservative MP Ben Bradley said the figures showed a drive for diversity was leaving white working class communities behind. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for speaking the truth there. At least we have somebody who is speaking up for the white working class. Our institutions value diversity of skin colour more than background or experience, he said, and that is a huge shame. But more importantly, it disadvantages the poorest. It is simply wrong. On the plus side, I am pleased that this is now being recognised, that these figures are gathered and looked at, and that some institutions are trying to rectify things. And this is the big problem here. As he points out, they are now valuing diversity of skin colour more than background or experience. This means that merit no longer counts for anything in Britain. When we had the British Empire, it was all about merit. You could have somebody that started off being a cowherd or working on a farm, and during the course of their lifetime, they could work themselves up to being the governor of a province in India. In fact, we've had people that we've covered in the Greatest Britain series that have worked the way up to being governor of India. We had a system in the British Empire of merit. If people showed that they were good at what they were doing, they would get the promotion. And that was the system that the non-whites came into. That was the system that the ethnic minorities came into when they moved here, and yet they were unable to make use of it. And that's why we've had to put in these diversity agendas. For some reason, the ethnic minorities were not able to get to where everybody else got to through merit. And they've blamed us for this. We have said that we must be the ones at fault here. We must be being racist. It must be down to us, the reason why they're not able to get to the same places in our system. And that's not the reason. The reason is because they are different races. They have different average IQs. They have different racial characters. And all we have to do is look at their homelands to see the evidence of that. Before we even get round to testing their IQ, all we have to do is look at their history and look at what their homelands look like. That's the reason why we don't have many black Jamaican doctors and scientists. It's because they don't have, on average, they don't have that ability. There are much less of them that are capable of doing that than there are among white people. And again, this is why we see that 80% of all the doctors that are sacked for gross negligence, gross incompetence in the NHS, they also happen to be non-white. So we're diverting all our resources into trying to bring these people up, raise up their abilities, and it's just not possible. It's like trying to teach cats to herd sheep. It's not possible, and it will just end up using up all our resources. And it's turned us, our really good system that we had that was based on merit, where people could work their way up from the working class up to the upper class just through hard work. And it's turned that system on its head. And Britain used to be so proud of the meritocracy that we had. And it's just been ruined with the diversity agenda. And we've done it to ourselves, and we are the ones that are really suffering for this. It's the white working class that are really suffering. But as this Conservative MP, Ben Bradley, says, at least this is now being talked about, but are they going to do anything about it? A report by the National Education Opportunities Network, NEON, last year found that at more than half of institutions, less than 5% of students were white, and from areas where very few young people go to university. Less than 5% were white and from these areas. And yet we're told ethnic minorities are the underprivileged ones? Graham Atherton, director of NEON, said its analysis of universities' 2020-2021 access plans showed that only 4 had specific targets relating to white working class students, compared with 27 in 2019, 2020. So they've actually gone down. In 2019, there were 27 that were trying to target white working class. And in 2021, only 4. So this is being talked about, but nothing is being done about it. And I bet the universities that were targeting the white working class, I bet they were accused of being racist. And I bet the fact that they were targeting the white working class was used as evidence of white privilege. I mean, why else would they have stopped doing this in defiance of the facts and the statistics. It must have been social pressure. Must have been because they were accused of being racist. Graham Atherton said, if they don't feature, they are not a strategic priority. And if they are not a priority, universities are less likely to do any work with them. Founded in 1916, SOAS describes itself as the world's leading institution for the study of Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. Alumni include Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi, the socialite Jemima Kam, and former Conservative Minister Enoch Powell. I bet what they were trying to do, because Enoch Powell was an alumni from there, I bet they were trying to distance themselves from him by deliberately disadvantaging the white working class. I mean, that's I'm only making an allegation there. I'm not saying that that's exactly what they did, but they probably would have wanted to distance themselves from him and try to show how much they are investing in the non-white community. And of course, if you do that, it's going to be at the expense of the white community. It's a zero-sum game here. If you're going to invest your resources in one community, it has to come from somewhere else, doesn't it? It has to be taken from somebody else's community. An SOAS spokesman acknowledged the challenges of attracting white working-class students, but said the university had improved since 2017, and it was now working with schools in London, Sheffield, and Northampton. The spokesman said a different measure of poverty, the index of multiple deprivations, showed SOAS's intake of white disadvantaged teenagers rose from 9% in 2017 to 14% the following year. So their answer to this is to actually change the parameters. To change the parameters so that it includes non-whites, I bet. So instead of having the measure of poverty that shows the white working class communities, they now use an index of multiple deprivations. So they're basically including others, aren't they? They've changed the parameters so that they don't actually include white working class, to say that actually they've got more there than is being alleged in this document. And this is rather like the country shooting itself in the foot, isn't it? Instead of giving the resources to those most likely to succeed and create wealth for the country, we're taking the resources from that group of people, from that group with the highest IQ, and diverting them towards a group of people that are not going to be likely to benefit the country in such an important way. It's ridiculous. You couldn't run a business like that without running it into the ground. And these diversity quotas are going to run a lot of businesses into the ground, I think, as we go on and as they push diversity all the more. Well, changing the subject here, over the weekend we had the Million MAGA March, about 100,000 Trump supporters in Washington, D.C. The day went by entirely peacefully. We had people praying. Alex Jones was there. Nick Fuentes was there. There were live streams, all very positive. Donald Trump went past in the morning. The BBC tried to pretend that there weren't that many people there. They tried to pretend that Donald Trump wasn't interested and went playing golf. And then when it came to the evening and the Trump supporters were going home, the usual situation occurred. The left turned up and tried to pick off stragglers. Any of the Trump supporters that ended up on their own were viciously attacked. I saw some incredible violence on Twitter. I linked to them in the chat room. 5 or 6 incidents of just horrific violence of individual Trump supporters being beaten up and attacked, sucker punched by non-whites and by leftists. And this is what we see whenever you see a demonstration, a nationalist demonstration, a civic nationalist demonstration, or patriots, we see that the left come out and they viciously attack the nationalists. And the mainstream media will then portray it as if it was violence that was brought on by the nationalists. Now, the BBC called the supporters Trump supporters, but Sky TV called it a far-right rally, and they said it was far-right groups that were there. There was one instance that I saw on Twitter on video, and there was a black woman with a knife. She was about to stab somebody, and luckily somebody jumped up from the side and knocked her out, and then you saw somebody else take the knife from her, disarm her. And then about an hour after that, after seeing this video, the photograph of the black woman with a knife lying on the ground was being sent around Twitter saying the Proud Boys had knocked out this innocent, unarmed black woman. And this is the sort of level of dishonesty that we see here from the left, where they will try to portray people as being unarmed when in actual fact they had a knife and were trying to stab somebody. If it wasn't for one of these Proud Boys knocking her out, somebody could well have been stabbed. And we can contrast this with instance of another white man who was trying to walk home, and this black guy came up from behind him and sucker punched him, knocked him out, and instantly another leftist woman, I think she might have been white, she jumped forwards and kicked him in the head while he was unconscious on the ground. And another one of the left-wing supporters stole the guy's phone, and they started trying to steal from him. And you can contrast that with the black woman with a knife. I mean, she was knocked out, and then she was disarmed. The knife was taken from her. But nobody was then beating her up while she was lying there comatose. Nobody was there stealing from her, because Trump supporters and nationalists on the whole don't do things like that. We are the upright, moral people, and the left are just immoral animals. I mean, all you have to do is just look at their behavior on some of these families walking home from this Trump rally that are having urine thrown at them. You know, and people saying, why are you bringing kids here? Well, because it's a family day out. We don't expect to be attacked on the streets of America's capital, to be honest, when you're supporting the president. I've got a report here about it from Breitbart here. The DC police failed me today, says a conservative attorney forced to walk through a gauntlet of BLM Antifa protesters after police blocked the shortest pathway to his hotel. The incident happened after the Million MAGA March on Saturday, as anti-Trump activists attacked multiple conservatives leaving the event. A video tweeted by Daily Caller field reporter Jorge Ventura shows a man who later identified himself as Christopher Horn and two other conservatives approaching a line of DC Metro police officers blocking people from entering BLM Plaza near the White House. The trio pleaded with officers to be allowed to proceed to their hotel via the shortest distance, having already been hassled by BLM protesters, Horn said in a tweet. But the officers rejected their appeal to steer clear of the chanting BLM protesters, many of whom were standing close by. Horn responded to Ventura's tweeted video saying, "I'm the guy in your video that is seen pleading with the police to go to my hotel, the Hay Adams, which was literally less than half a block from that corner." He said the cops refused to let them go to the hotel, and instead they directed the trio into what Horn called the Black Lives Matter mob. "I have always been a huge supporter of the police, but the DC police failed me today," Horn continued. "It almost felt like it was a setup, to be honest." The video bears this out. Within two steps of turning away from the cops, Horn is confronted by a man on a bicycle wearing black block. People started bumping him immediately as he walks into the crowd of protesters. As they cross the street, a woman, orange cap, attempts to steal a rolled-up Trump flag Horn is carrying. She failed in her attempt but came back for more. Orange cap circles around and sucker punches Horn from behind. "What's the matter with you people?" Horn yelled at the crowd. Two men in black block attempted to block them as they walk away. One of them punches Horn in the ear. Someone attempts to restrain the mob from pursuing the trio. However, orange cap again sneaks up behind Horn and his companions. The mob attacked a man wearing black block, including a helmet. As he ran away, Orange Cap is seen assaulting the man two times. The video leads into another attack on a different man that left him lying knocked out on the street and kicked in the head. Orange Cap again interjects herself and assaults a man in a brown coat. When she sees the man get sucker punched and knocked to the ground, she grabs her friend, who steals his cell phone and then shouts "Go, go!" as the pair take off running. As other conservatives pull the injured man to safety, a police officer is finally seen in the video. He radios for assistance. Nearly 4 minutes had passed from Horn's initial brush with Black Lives Matter in front of police officers to an officer calling for assistance. During that time, Horn and his friends were assaulted multiple times, and another man was seriously injured from attacks by the BLM Antifa crowd. Now, what does this remind you of? It reminds me of Charlottesville, doesn't it? When the nationalist demonstrators who had a permit for their demonstration were confronted by Antifa protesters who did not have a permit for their demonstration, and the police would not allow the nationalists into the park, and they directed them to walk back through the Black Lives Matter Antifa crowd after declaring a state of emergency, which of course caused all the trouble because the two opposing sides were not kept apart. And they did exactly the same thing at the Million MAGA March, as we see here, as has been reported here. The Trump supporters were directed to walk through the violent terrorist Antifa mob. And this happened. This seems to always happen at these demonstrations. I if the police want to avoid trouble, why do they do this? Why do they direct the Trump supporters or the nationalists to walk through the Antifa crowd? And I don't think it's the normal police officer on the street that does this. I think it must come down from above, really, directing this sort of thing to happen. And then, of course, the mainstream media will report the violence as being caused by the Trump supporters, by the nationalists, where in actual fact, the Trump supporters would have just been trying to defend themselves, and there never would have been any violence in the first place if the police had just done their job and kept the two supporters separate. I mean, hopefully, there wasn't that much violence. I mean, I did seem to be seeing quite a few videos of horrific violence, as I said. But if you had 100,000 Trump supporters there, and there were, I don't know, 10, 20 videos showing violence, then that is really less than 0.1% of people that would have been attacked. So hopefully, it wasn't as bad as it appears. But it's shocking that you can't even go to the capital city of your country to show your support for your president without having bottles of urine thrown at you and people trying to stab you. That's the situation that we're now in America. It is that polarized. And I hope and pray that Donald Trump wins his court cases and is rightfully gets that second term. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.